Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the WPTF Weekend Gardener for another Saturday. This is Saturday, isn't it?
It is Saturday, yeah.
I just want to make sure. We are so glad. I mean, you'd think I would know it's Saturday because doing this show for 40 years. I don't know. My sleep is so irregular. But I know I got plenty of sleep last night, so I should know. That's a good sign. Well,
he got 3 hours last night.
No. I got a bunch. I bet I got 8 hours.
Hey, you're halfway on a plane, right?
But it's hard to sleep, even with drugs, on an airplane, especially
true
over at the Atlantic at night. Just
good whiskey solves that problem.
Something. If I was a drinking man, that might help, but it doesn't do anything for
me. Why is everybody looking at me?
We were just waiting for a car.
Oh my gosh!
Well, I know you're not a whiskey man, but
no, I'm a whisker man.
So we got several people here today. Brother Rufus, you heard. Amanda Bratcher from the Lee County Cooperative Extension Service, and none other than Tomato Gerald.
I'm back.
Or Tomato Pepper. What else are you selling? What else did you sell this summer?
It take too long to name.
Yeah, got a lot of vegetables. And so things did well. You were out there a long time at the farmer's market. March
21st through June 1st. That's 73 days in a row for those counting.
Oh, my goodness.
But yes, had a tremendous season. I 50% increase in sales from the previous year. And every year has been better than the year before. But I really want to thank a lot of the Weekend Gardener listeners because I can't tell you how many stopped by.
Well, I'm glad. They're all fine folks. Yeah. You know, Melissa and I go to Pittsburgh a lot, and I've noticed that the farm, and I think they're listeners too, the farm that always grows, you know, acres and acres of tomatoes is not growing anything.
Oh, wow.
At least on the road.
That you see.
Yeah, that we can see, and they have a really nice roadside stand that they built, and so I don't know. I hope something will appear.
Well, you know, they're practicing crop rotation. If they've been growing tomatoes by the road over and over, maybe they've got it stashed somewhere else.
I hope so. I know a lot of people stop there and depend on that. They're good folks. So popular. We had. Yeah, it was last week. We had Craig LaHoulier on for a little while, or maybe it was the week before. I don't know. A week before, maybe.
Well, I tell Gerald and Amanda what he plans to do, which I can't figure out how he's going to do it. He's growing a Rufus tomato, and he's going to send us to eat in here in the studio the results of the Rufus experiment. And I guess he's got a method of shipping them.
If you pick one before it's completely ripe, because, you know, most of the heirloom ones got thin skin and they don't hold up well. I guess you could, if it wasn't completely ripe, you could.
Are you calling me an heirloom?
Package it good enough.
you certainly are, as a matter of fact, to North Carolina. But it's kind of become the battle of the Rufus tomatoes.
I've got three plants from Gerald. and they've got little ones on them. And by the way, let me, now this is going to be a very controversial thing to say. I had tomatoes June 15, and I have for, this is unusual, I am giving Gerald a tomato.
Wow.
And this is Cousin Gladys's tomato that came up somewhere. And she doesn't know what it is, but I know how they're good.
So we just call it Cousin Gladys.
Cousin Gladys. Here's one for you, Amanda.
Oh, well, thank you, sir.
And I have two little bitty ones for you, Mike.
Okay.
I'll eat them on the plane tonight. Give one to Melissa. We'll eat them on the plane.
And so
that looks like a good slicing.
What does it look like, Gerald?
Tomato sandwich.
It's a beef steak for a while.
Yeah.
That's a beef steak?
Some type of pink beef steak.
For yeah.
Well, she said it just so came excited. Up. And bless her heart, she died of cancer 2 years ago, and I saved some seeds. Now, I know there are people out there that got, now, no hothouse. This is not hothouse. This is, I started the seed. Phil put them in her hothouse, and they're just going crazy now.
Yeah. Mm. So they've got the right treatment.
I'm glad to know what you think that is.
At
beef steak of one kind.
At first glance, it looks similar to Syrian Giant, which is a pretty famous Kentucky heirloom pink beefsteak. But there are a number of ones that are, you know, that's not exclusive to those two. But it does have a little bit of a green shoulder, so that sets it off and will help some into trying to narrow down the possibilities.
See, we've got the,
you got the right man.
And knows his tomatoes. Mm.
I love that.
So what kind of comments did you get there? I'm sure you got a lot of questions about tomatoes. Ooh. Like, what do I do with this?
I just can't.
Do people really ask that? What do I do with this?
If I had time to,
oh, Lord.
To lie, I mean, you just can't believe. Have I got to take it out of the pot, is he, and I'm selling them in a 4.5 inch?
Okay.
You know, so that's...
Well, the biggest yours are.
Has it got to be planted? Can I grow it in the house in this pot? Mm-hmm. Does it have to be in sun? I mean, you just can't. The whole. What's the comedian? Was it Bill Invall that does the here's your sign, sign, you know?
Yeah.
If I wasn't a business person actually trying to make some sales every now and then, I'd want to reach over and just hold a sign up. Mm. But
of course, were not the Weekend Gardener listeners
I get some doozies now. And then it just runs the gamut. And then you get some of the people that have some legitimate, you know, concerns and ask some really good questions from there. But when you're getting them nonstop all day long, you kind of get a little numb. And I try not to snap every now and then when I get some of those.
Especially
that
you've been out there 73 days.
And you know, part of the reason I do this is I want to help people be more successful.
Yeah.
And tomatoes are the most difficult fruiting plant to grow in this part of the world,
bar none. They are the drama queens.
And it's, you know, there's so many diseases that can attack them. So many of those diseases flourish in heat and humidity. And, you know, it's what we're famous for.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to tell things so they can be more successful. So there's, and I get people every year. If somebody sent me a picture yesterday of their harvest, and they've tickled to death because they're, you know, finally getting some results. So, yes, all of that good makes up for Dylan. It just goes with the territory.
Well, I want to know, Gerald, if you agree with Craig Coulier. He uses the same soil. He said this several times, that over again, just from last year. Do you need to amend it in any way? In pots, I'm talking about.
Right. So the whole key is if I do the same as long as it didn't have any disease issues. In the soil. So if I, one, now that, you know, I'm selling plants and selling so many plants, I've got to have, every year I'm growing plants to save seed. So I've got to have results. So if there's any question about the soil and which type of disease issue I had in it last year, I just discard it.
That I'm holding up my phone. There's a photo of his backyard with tomatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did I show you that?
Because, you know, one of the things that people that are new to gardening don't realize, soil is super expensive, and the most expensive part of the vegetable garden process, even if you're building a new raised bed or growing them in containers or whatever, it's eye-opening to see how expensive soil is. But, you know, I tell people all the time, it's the most important thing. Yeah. If that's not the place to be cutting corners.
No.
I grew up on a farm like Gerald did. I remember back in the 60s, I was in Washington with Senator Irvin, and I had to buy soil on that. I thought, what in the world, buying dirt? And it's like the water thing came along. And a guy one time that invented Le Bleu came to me and said, well, you want to go in with me on selling water? I said, do what? Sell water?
Yeah.
And I missed out on that opportunity, but you're right about soil. The most frequent question I get asked is, how often do you fertilize tomatoes? And I don't know. I just about every 3 or 4 weeks to put a little dose in there.
Well, most people, of all the things, people are doing everything right, but, I mean, you know, they've got good soil, they're watering them like they should, they've got plenty of sunlight. That's probably the biggest mistake I see is people do not fertilize their tomatoes enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They fertilize them one time when they plant them and think that will get them from sometime in April or May all the way to Halloween. And that's just not the case.
I did a good guess.
Well, yeah, and we've gotten so much rain. Like every time, especially if you're growing in a container or raised bed.
Bleach it out,
about it. Yeah, every time you pour water through there. You know, it's flushing out any of the nutrients that are there in a little bit at a time, but you get 20 inches of rain, and that's a lot. That's a lot of your fertilizer just gone.
I think some of it comes from people here, and especially people that are more involved gardeners, that, well, too much nitrogen, and you'll have all plant, and you won't have any blooms of fruit. And there's truth to that, but after the plant gets grown, you've got to get from that 6, 8, 12-inch, whatever size plant you first planted, up to that 6, 7, 8-foot tall plant. And it takes a lot of food to do that. And I just, time after time, people send me pictures. I talk to them. And when I say, how many times did you fertilize? They say once. Or, well, I had it in some really good organic soil. And I say, and that got it off to a really good start. What were you going to do for the next 4 months after that? And they look at me kind of, well, you kind of smart-assy, but I say, well, sometimes I am, but that is a crucial mistake.
Mr. Raley, you're off the air. No.
They're heavy feeders. Yeah,
very, very heavy. And most people just don't realize that.
All right, we'll take a break and come back and talk with Paul and others here at WPTF. Amanda Bratcher with us from the Lee County Extension Service. Gerald Adams, of course, tomato. Well, whatever.
Whisperer. You know, tomato whisperer.
And the great Rufus Edmonston, all here on the Weekend Gardener. It's 8:20. Well, we're back on WPTF with Weekend Gardener, and let's go to Paul in Wendell. Paul, how you doing, buddy? How's everything over there in your garden?
Everything's just fine, Mike.
I'm glad to hear that. We're doing okay.
Good. Sound good. Sounds like you're all having a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've just been out picking peppers and some tomatoes, and life is beautiful.
Well, Colin, your tomatoes ripe?
I've got some, yeah. I got a lot of Sun Golds that are ripe.
Oh, okay. That doesn't count, though.
No, I have a Cherokee Purple that I picked this morning, and I had one yesterday.
Wonderful.
So, yeah. And there's another one I can't remember. I'm not real good with varieties. I got a lot of tomatoes, and they're starting to turn red. So everything's looking pretty good out here. I've got one big question, though. I've never really grown squash until this year. And I had some huge yellow squash, big, long things. They were almost 18 inches long. And it was kind of obvious that they were ready to be picked. But I've got this acorn squash. and I'm not sure how to know when it's ripe.
Yeah.
Well, they are much slower. They're not like the crookneck yellow or straight neck yellow where you blink your eye and it's an inch long today and the next day you're cutting it to eat.
Right.
They are very slow to produce, but part of the reason, do you have any idea what the particular variety was? Because some of the acorns look a little different than others, so because that's usually you go by the coloring on them, because if you know the particular cultivar, you know exactly what it's going to look like when ripe. But they are very, that's a winter squash, and all the stuff in the winter squash family is very slow. It's almost like growing a pumpkin.
Yeah.
They're very, very slow to make.
Okay.
Sometimes you can pat them. There's a sound that they make. They sound kind of solid but hollow.
You sound like thumping a watermelon.
it is very similar. The acorns, depending on the variety, are kind of small, but there is still kind of a sound if you flick it that they have when they're there. And sometimes if they've sat there long enough, sometimes the bald spot kind of makes a color, just like a watermelon or a pumpkin.
Well, Amanda, can you make that sound for us?
I can't. I'm so sorry.
She's saving that for pollinator day.
I was just thinking of trying of how to describe it, because it's a sound. There's a sound that they make. What was I going to say?
Sorry, we didn't mean to throw you off.
Oh, well, you were talking about, I know you asked about your acorn squash, but you mentioned about your yellow squash, and if they get that long, they're going to not taste quite as good as if they're younger. A lot of times we harvest them when they're, 5 to 6 inches long, because that's when they're sweeter. The longer they get, the woodier they get and the drier they get. I mean, they're still good, and you can still cook with them, but if you're kind of going for that sweet flavor of squash, it's better to get them when they're about no longer than 6 inches long.
And I got these other ones that are kind of flat and yellow. I don't know exactly what they are either. Somebody gave me some plants, and I just threw them in the end of the raised beds, and now they're taking over the world.
Interesting. Are they long and vining, or they kind of stay kind of bunched?
You mean the plant itself, or they're like bushy.
Okay.
One of these weird zucchinis. There are lots of zucchinis now that have unusual coloring to them, not the traditional dark green.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like these are like a almost a safety yellow.
Huh. Cool.
And they're flat.
The patty cake. Okay. So those again are kind of ones that you want to harvest when they're young. So like maybe a couple days, and when they're soft, because the larger they get, the drier they get. But you can slice those just like you would like your traditional yellow crookneck, long summer yellow neck, and they're just a different shape, but still a very sweet flavor. Yeah,
okay,
very cool.
Well, cool.
Patty cake is the type.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul. Appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a great day, guys.
You too. We'll talk to Rob coming up after the news here on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. Mike Crayley here, along with Brother Rufus and Amanda Bratcher from the Lee County Cooperative Extension Service. Of course, the tomato whisperer, Gerald Adams, as all we've talked about this morning is tomatoes so far, but Amanda and Gerald and Rufus know a lot more than that. So give us a call at 919-860-9783. Let's go to Rob in Durham.
Oh, good morning.
Hey, Rob, you got a tomato question?
Yes. Well, my cousin and I were talking about a farm that he went to. Inside the barn, they were growing tomato plants out of pie plates. And the tomato plants were suspended by a fishing line that was attached to a reel. There were a lot of them. Attached to a reel assembly up in the ceiling. And they would lift the tomato plants up with the fishing lines as they grew.
Mm-hmm.
So that the first 5 feet, there was nothing, but above that were all the tomatoes.
Yeah, that's really how all the greenhouse tomatoes are grown. They run a string up. Some people cut it back to just one vine. Some people do the Y2 vine. So there's a little variation there. When I did it, I did just the one vine. And basically, you clip it to a string, go tall as you can, which the greenhouses I was growing them in were 12 foot tall. And when it gets that high, then you move the bag. I use grow bags, and you slide the bag along the way. And it wasn't uncommon in a season to have one get, 30 foot long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember visiting Phil's when you were doing it out there, and I thought, this is magic. Total magic.
I didn't know whether to believe him or not, but now I believe him.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. To do it like that, that you can get them closer together. The whole issue when you're growing in a greenhouse or anywhere indoors is you only have so many square feet to grow in. So this way you can get the maximum amount of production. And they cut the part of the breeding for greenhouse tomatoes is to get them to bloom closer on the vine. So that way you have more blooms, you have more fruit. And of course, this day and age, everything's about, can you make money? So the more fruit and more poundage you can produce, you're increased the chances of being able to make some money. But, if you go buy a tomato in the grocery store, I think it's 90-some% of them are grown under plastic somewhere in the world.
And most of them not fitting to eat.
Yeah, because they ship better. The stuff that we grow in our backyard, we're going out there, we're walking 10 feet, picking it, and going back in the house. But a lot of those folks who are growing them in a greenhouse, they have to put them on a truck in a box under something. They may be setting out for a day or two, and they have to be able to withstand some wear and tear. So,
yeah, I'd almost forgotten, Amanda, what a good tomato tastes like until I got my first one 5 days ago.
So how did you enjoy this tomato?
Of course, it was on light bread.
Light bread
with, of course, the only kind of mayo you're supposed to do.
Yeah, Duke's.
I had to stand over the sink, of course, Jerry knows that means. And
yeah.
It was really, really quite an orgy.
I'd have to hang over the sink with an apron in place. Yeah.
So did you get to see this operation, or was just your friend saw it and he was telling you about it?
My cousin saw it. Okay. It's probably been 20 years.
You've been saving up, haven't you, Rob?
Have you ever heard of Harvest Hosts?
Mm-mm.
Okay, Harvest Hosts is a network of farms and wineries and that kind of place where you can book an RV site overnight.
Huh.
You can go stay on a farm for 2 or 3 days.
Oh, that's cool.
And there are hundreds of them across North Carolina and South Carolina.
Huh.
Good Lord, never heard of it.
That's brilliant. Yeah, it's like Airbnb, but for...
I'd be afraid somebody put me to work.
Maybe I'll cancel my subscription now that you mention it. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Rob. You take care, my friend.
All right, we'll see.
All right, now. How about that? Well, but you don't grow them like that. You've grown tomatoes and straw bales.
Yes, I did that before. It's a very good way to grow. It's a more disease-free way to grow. I've grown the actual fruit in greenhouses a lot of different times. And the problem with growing fruit in the greenhouses to sell is pretty expensive, and you've got to be able to get more money for them to make it pan out. But for the people that do it big time, that's how the majority of fresh market tomatoes that are sold in supermarkets and grocery stores come from a greenhouse somewhere in North or South America. But as Amanda was saying earlier, part of whatever the breeding to get them to stand up, to be able to withstand, shipping greater distances and not getting ripe so quick, is making the skin thicker. And almost without exception, I can probably name a few, but almost all of your best tasting tomatoes have thinner skin.
Well, now that doesn't work with human beings, does it?
Well, yeah. probably not. But that becomes there are some exceptions. There are some hybrid tomatoes with thicker skin that do taste good. But when you get into a lot of the best tasting tomatoes, the skin is very thin and they don't stay ripe long. You got to eat them pretty quick.
Yeah.
All right. Well, to continue this discussion, talk about all kinds of things gardening wise coming up on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. It's 8:40. Back on WPTF, I was just mentioning to Gerald, who is a lifelong resident of Knightdale, that there's been an accident involving a lumber truck.
Ooh.
Hit the Wendell Parkway Bridge. So I don't know if it did any damage to the bridge. I don't know if his load was too high or what the deal was, but you may take note of that, Gerald, and departing. Today, we'll have to something to keep up with, but there were some crazy drivers on the work this morning out
well,
there
it was
today.
Foggy when I came in, I'm like, what in the world is going on? You couldn't even see the stoplight. I had to slow down to tell whether the stoplight was green or red.
Wow,
you just couldn't see it.
Yeah, that's mostly gone now, but sure.
I've never seen anything like that in June. Maybe in the spring, but not on the first day of summer.
Yeah, well, we had the cold front come through, but I mean, it didn't get that cold. The humidity was better yesterday, but we certainly have a lot of heat coming up, and for everything in the landscape, it's going to be suffering too. We've gotten all of this rain.
Oh gosh,
and
yeah.
I don't know what I haven't looked at the long term forecast to see if
next week didn't show. It was one or two days that was, 40% maybe, but most of the days didn't look like any rain, hot and dry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I remember June last year was when we had that terrible scourge that started with corn and some other things. Corn was about a total loss last year. The corn looks great right now. I've ridden a lot in the country, and it looks wonderful. So I hope that keeps up, but...
I don't know. After this week, these temperatures are way worse than when I went to bed last night.
These Bermuda highs that come in, I guess that's what it is. They're unrelenting, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, we've gotten a lot of rain, which will help with some of the plant stress, but people are going to see their plants wilting this week. And it is important to not necessarily water unless you put your finger
in the soil.
Yeah,
like hydrangeas, sometimes just kind of fall over from the heat and not from lack of water.
A lot of plants do. They naturally wilt, not because they lack water. It's one of the few things they physiologically can do to both conserve and conserve water, but then also just reduce the amount of leaf surface that's in touch with the light. So they're wilting sometimes because they don't have water, but they're also wilting sometimes because they just want to shade themselves. So for folks who are concerned about their plants' health this week, don't water in the middle of the day. Water, if you feel like you need to water, put your finger in the soil and water early in the morning or late in the afternoon after it starts to cool off a little bit, but don't touch them in the middle of the day. Try not to interact with your plants too much. Don't put out too much fertilizer. In fact, don't put any fertilizer out this week. Yeah. And don't spray. Don't spray any fungicides or anything unless you're going to do it early in the morning or late in the afternoon. If you're going to be interacting with your plants during the day at this heat, you're going to cause more damage than anything. So pretty much stop gardening as it gets above 85.
I know water is very important to tomato plants.
Yeah, you're going to have to. And sometimes people forget, too, we've had all this rain. Well, if you've got something that's newly planted or, pretty young and a young root system. And, of course, even tomatoes is a, 4 or 5, at most 6 month kind of crop. It's going to have some water because the ground can dry out really quickly, especially when something's only in the, you know, first 10 or 12 inches.
Especially in a pot.
Of soil.
Or in a
and
pot,
especially
yeah.
in a pot. So, you know, I like to water them first thing. And, you know, Amanda's absolutely correct. You can do more damage trying to do something in the middle of the day, scorch the plant and leaves. But get that water on it first thing in the morning. And, you know, some of these days, if you've got some tomato plants that are 6 foot tall already and wrapped up with fruit and blooming, when that tomato plant has fruit on it, it's the highest its water intake will ever be, sucking them up. And you might even have to water them a second time at, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. Just try not to get that plant wet to stay wet overnight if you can, you know, water it right at soil level.
Yep.
All right, Marty is with us. Marty, good morning. You're on the Weekend Gardener.
Hey, good morning. How are y'all?
Oh, good. Thank you. Hope you're well.
Good. Something is eating my basil plant. I have basil planted beside my tomatoes, beside parsley, beside cilantro, and it's just something is eating the top leaves off of the tomato plant. The bottom leaves are okay. The smaller basil plants are okay, but the top of the big, the ones that are ready to be harvested, I can't harvest them because something is eating them. And I don't want to put, I don't know if I should put neem oil on it because, you know, I don't know if neem oil would affect the taste of the basil.
So is it like chunks from the outside in, not holes inside the leaves, and is like the stem left and the rest of it's gone?
Yeah, they're like eating it to the veins in the leaves, whatever it is.
So it could be slugs. Do you never see anything on them? You just come out the next day and like, wow, what has happened?
Well, it's gotten kind of so far gone now that I come out the next day and it looks pretty much the same. It's just, but again, I would think with slugs, it would be the plant, the leaves closer to the ground. That's what I was thinking, but maybe not.
You know, it's usually the outer leaves, and they work their way into it. And sometimes to them, the outer leaves, the younger leaves, are tender and taste better than the older, more mature leaves.
The younger leaves are not getting eaten. It's the leaves that are full and mature at the very top of the plant.
Okay. You know, and yeah, there's so many things that can eat it, especially, you know, if there's nothing else to eat or if they're, it's a particular pests have preferences. The best thing is to email a picture to your cooperative extension office, see if they can take a look at it. Because Gerald's questions about like what does the eating look like? Because sometimes there's holes in between the veins, sometimes it's from the edge, but there's, you know, those are just based on the types of mouth parts that different insects and other arthropods have. But depending on what it is, you may have a different treatment or just may need to watch the plant or cover it. But yeah, you definitely want to make sure we get it properly identified down to what it is.
Yeah, you can take it to
a... spray neem oil on it.
Not neem. I mean, if you've got a caterpillar doing it, then Dipel would be the best thing to spray. That's, you know, a bacteria, so you're not putting insecticide on it. But it only affects caterpillars, and it ruins their digestive system. So there's not any potential negative outcome from doing that.
Would it be, Gerald and Amanda, the kind of thing that comes through on my hibiscus each year and eats off all the leaves?
No, and this is why, and Gerald made a good point, Dipel's a great, that's Bacillus thuringiensis, and it is a great pesticide for caterpillars in the Lepidoptera order. But your hibiscus... is being eaten by hibiscus sawfly, which is a type of wasp, and that is in the order Hymenoptera. And if you sprayed Dipel on them, which they look like caterpillars, but if you sprayed Dipel on them, it would not be effective.
They'd lick it up and keep on going.
Yeah. So this is why it's important to properly identify a pest that you have, because, you know, even though they may look similar, it may not be what you think it is. And, you know, you may put something on your plant that isn't effective. So I know if you go to a big box store, sometimes the pesticide sections in your local store, they say, oh, spray this for these three things, or spray this for your things being eaten, spray neem oil on it. It's, you know, it's organic and it's not harmful. But if you're not properly identifying the true cause of the issue, then you're just pouring money into somebody else's pocket.
Well, on the hibiscus, I've learned to put up with it. you still get your bloom. They don't fool with the bloom.
Nope. And the Japanese beetles will come to them sometimes.
I'm wondering, would that be possible, what Marty's talking about, Japanese beetles?
Well, usually if you've got Japanese beetle damage, you see them.
Yeah.
You're going to see them during the day on them and all that. Of the things that you... And if you had hornworms, which get on tomatoes, or the old tobacco worms, as we used to call them, they're on that plant somewhere. They don't go hide during the day and come back out at night. Slugs are one of the few things that you rarely ever, unless you're going out there at 10 o'clock at night, will ever actually see on the plant doing, you know, eating away. And that's why I'd asked you about that. But most of the other things, you're going to see the culprit, or there's a good chance you should see it from there. But you mentioned
ever had problems with basil having this particular issue. I'm not going on.
Every year is different.
Yeah, it seems to be.
welcome to gardening.
Yeah, welcome to gardening.
But you mentioned neem oil, and it's a good thing to point out to people. No way in the world, even if neem oil would work, would you spray it next week? How is this going to be?
Yeah.
Because it would just, it will blister and burn up a plant. We're going to have 100-degree weather.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you all very much. I'll take a picture of it and send it to the office.
Sounds good.
Very good, Marty. Thank you so much. Report back to us if you find out exactly what it was.
Yes.
Enjoy the show.
Thank you so much for being a part of it. 854, at least one lane closed on I-87 near Exit 11 underneath Wendell Falls Parkway due to a crash of a tractor trailer that was carrying lumber. So if you're heading east or west, I don't know which it was.
Well, at least it didn't sound like any other vehicles were involved lumber trucks and cement mixers and gas trucks are on my list of things not to run into.
Yeah.
Or hopefully not to run into me.
Hey, you better believe it. Yeah.
I'd give those things a wide berth. I live off a road that they're cutting lumber all the time, and I see them. I give them 300 feet or more.
Absolutely. So, there are insects out there in abundance, I'm sure, as we are warming up, and today is the first full day of summer. And so, it's something to expect, and chemicals can only go so far, and you have to be careful with vegetables.
Have to be vigilant, keeping an eye on things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like Amanda was talking about. See if you can find the insects. Catch them in the act. Sneak up on them.
I love when we get samples at the extension office of observant, you know, people really looking at their landscape and digging down and understanding and bringing us a sample. I'm really fortunate. My colleague, Meredith Favre, who's the manager at the Sanford Farmers Market, but her master's is in entomology, and people will bring in insects, and I'm pretty decent, but she's excellent. And, really helping folks, you know, identify their insect and also just helping them, sometimes just assuaging their fears that, you know, this is a cool insect, but you know, the damage that it's causing is not actually worth doing anything about. Case in point, just a couple weeks ago, she had a client who was concerned about grubs eating her turf. And I'll let you guys know, more than just Japanese beetle grubs eat people's turf. Yeah. And it's not always the end of the world if grubs are eating your turf. If you have healthy turf, they can tolerate grub damage. But anyways, this lady saw the grub eating her turf, and she caught it in a jar and brought it to the extension office. And she was concerned. She wanted to make sure if it was a Japanese beetle grub or not. And it turns out it was a tiger beetle, which is a really cool group of beetles that we have here. They're found throughout the world, but they're some of the fastest beetles. But, you know, it was in grub form. So when they're beetles, you know, they're running around.
Running a marathon, you say fast?
eating.
They run faster than a cheetah does in terms of, like, if you did the calculations about their body size.
So what do they eat?
They are predators. So they eat other insects and small animals. So they're great.
Small animals?
Oh, my God. What are you talking about?
They can be half an inch to an inch long. And they're beautiful, shiny beetles. But anyways. The grub found out that the, what it was not that, and nobody had ever photographed it before, so the university got to photograph it.
Well, we're going to take a break and be back with more of the Weekend Gardener. You got to hold of ourselves.
I had to lift my feet up off the floor.